Hello, it's the Guardian Film Show, your rock of financial probity and a trusty guide through the world of cinema. This week we have a number of exciting investment opportunities on the table. We don't want to pressurise you, but there is a lot of interest and time is money. We're going to put you down for a couple of tickets. Up for grabs on this week's show, Michael Cera takes mescal in the desert in the grungy drama Crystal Fairy, and Robert Mitchum is determined not to spare the rod and spoil the child in the remastered, reissued resurrection of Hallelujah, Charles Laughton's 1955 thriller, The Night of the Hunter. First up, The Wolf of Wall Street, a swaggering Oscar contender, directed by Martin Scorsese and starring Leonardo DiCaprio as Jordan Belfort, an impish, high-flying financial trader who's surely heading for a fall. Ahead of the film's London premiere, I went into town to meet the film's co-stars, Jonah Hill and Margot Robbie.
My name is Jordan Belfort. At the tender age of 22, I headed to the only place that befit my high-minded ambitions.
Name of the game? Move the money from your client's pocket into your pocket.
But if you can make your client's money at the same time, it's advantageous to everyone, correct?
No.
In every one of us, there's a part of us that wants everything and wants to be the best and wants to be the richest and wants to be this or that. And hopefully, in most people, it's a small percentage. And what I felt when playing Donnie was that, what if there was someone who was all that?
Excuse me.
Yeah.
Is that your car on the lot?
Yeah.
Is it Jag?
Yeah.
How much money you make?
I don't know, $72,000 last month.
You show me a pay stub for $72,000 on it, I quit my job right now and I work for you. Hey, listen, I quit.
Do you see it as a morality story?
I just see it as a portrait of these people's lives at this time, and I think why Scorsese's, you know, he's my favorite filmmaker, but one of the reasons for that is that you leave his films discussing them, and you see, oh, I didn't like this, or I did like this, or I don't get why this happened, and that's what a great piece of art should do. It should spark conversation.
People know what's right and wrong. Everyone has a moral compass. What's more interesting is seeing other people's moral compasses getting swayed by influences, drugs, money, power, women, relationships. You know, it's funny to see how off track they can get.
With this script, I'm gonna teach each and every one of you to be the best.
This is the greatest company in the world!
I was becoming a legend.
Aren't you married?
Yeah, but married people can't have friends.
We're not gonna be friends.
I was making so much money, I didn't know what to do with it.
$26,000 for one dinner!
Dad, we're not poor anymore. Tell them about the sides.
What are these sides? They cure cancer?
The sides did cure cancer. That's the problem. They were there. That's why they were expensive.
Time now to meet this week's rogue traders, Catherine Short and Henry Barnes. Catherine, we all went to see this together, didn't we? That's quite a rare joint outing.
It was lovely. It was like a little family.
How was it as a family outing? Is it like Christmas?
It was great. I had a whale of a time, and I think you two did too. So if you say anything otherwise, I will know you're lying. I really enjoyed this. It's come in for a lot of backlash and self-righteous, pompous, hypocritical, dumbass criticism from people who say that it should have shown the impact of Jordan's malpractice or dodgy dealings on its victims. Mm. Well, that's just rubbish. I mean,
that's a whole other film, isn't
it? That's a whole other film. And is it okay? So, and why are we not allowed to sort of enjoy bankers in the same way that we've enjoyed gangsters through Scorsese's career so far? I think it's absolutely daft that. And then people say, well, it's not realistic. It's not showing the sort of impact on people. Well, a lot of bankers like Jordan don't have enormous comeuppance. They get away with it. It is fairly realistic. I thought, you know, I think all that is just so self-righteous, liberal rubbish. It's a wonderful film. I had a great time. It's so funny, isn't it? We were all laughing away and don't you dare
say
otherwise.
It is funny, and that's not something we associate with Scorsese necessarily.
Or with DiCaprio, actually. No. He's never struck me as a particularly funny actor before, but the scene, the sort of keynote scene where he massively ODs and then is struggling to drive home.
From the country club.
It's so funny. And I watched it again the other night and it really is hilarious.
It's a little bit all over the place.
Oh, it's a mess.
But in a kind of entertaining way.
Yeah, it's a really, really fun mess. Mm. And I agree about the glamorisation thing. I think it has to be glamorised. You have to understand what these people are addicted to and why they love their lifestyle.
But that's what Scorsese has built his career on, basically. Yeah. Glamorising and fetishising it and saying, isn't this exciting? Now it's going to turn to hell.
Yeah, and it is. And I think you'd be being disingenuous to say that it wasn't. You know, and that is part of the thrill of watching this film. And then, for me, it's too long. It does need an edit. And then the last third of it is perhaps less interesting because you have to have the comeuppance of the bankers. And I think Catherine's right that in real life, that just wouldn't happen. Mm. They would get away with earning lots of money and screwing over a lot of people. And that is sort of the thrill behind it. I thought Jonah Hill was excellent in this.
Yeah. And I'm really surprised. He's kind of Joe Pesci character, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. And he kind of has this transition from being a geeky guy who hasn't got a hope to suddenly becoming one of these masters of the universe. And you can see that, I think, in day-to-day life, that there are people like that who are losers, born losers, that become the most powerful people in the world.
Mm, just look around The Guardian.
Right, look at us. Exactly, you know, and, you know, we don't know what to do with that power, but we have a great time using it anyway.
Great responsibility as well. Jonah Hill was great, but there were some other slightly odd casting choices. I couldn't quite get over Joanna Lumley as sort of fairy godmother. And Jean Dujardin as well, I thought, felt like he was kind of just busting from another film and wasn't quite sure what he was doing.
I didn't mind that. So you've got Rob Reiner, wonderful to see a big part given to Rob Reiner, Jon Favreau, all these directors. Spike Jonze was great in that little part. I think really nice casting choices. And what Scorsese loves is the guy gang. You know, people have said this is sexist. What turns him on is the guy gang and the dynamics of that and, you know, the clown thing and all that. That's how it works. And it's brilliant about that. And you totally want to be part of this gang. I totally wanted to be part of this. And it's not just men. There's that very big scene, which I think this is probably a still from, where he singles out this woman that he's brought up from.
Yeah.
It's a terrific scene.
Yeah, it is good
scene. It's really good about women, that scene.
But he's like a kind of demented game show host, isn't he? He looks like Errol Flynn, but he's acting like, I don't know, Bruce Forsyth or something. Like
basically,
Dale Winton at the head of the office, kind of conducting the proceedings.
There's even an element of Stanley Tucci's character in The Hunger Games. There's a kind of the showbiz gloss and the glamour,
the grotesque of it all. Quality of
and also that idea that he's having to play up to a character that he's created himself, or this kind of myth of the idea of this man who has everything and can have even more on top of that. And he can't live up to that, and there is a tragedy to it as well. It's just that Scorsese doesn't take the time to show us that, and I think it's the better film for it.
Isn't it a bit of a Scorsese eating himself? It's a bit of a self-pastiche, isn't it? It's basically Goodfellas pantomime.
If anyone's allowed to eat themselves, it's got to be Marty.
And I'd much rather he did this than Hugo.
Hugo was dead.
Yeah. So why not stick to what he's good at? To it.
Yeah. No, this is like he's taken a huge amount of drugs and Thelma too is gacking up and they've gone crazy. It's really fun.
You get sued every week.
It's as if.
As if, yeah. And hang you
up from the hill. He's got pictures of your whole inner circle.
This is bad.
It's okay.
Rub my temple.
You're all right.
This right here is the land of opportunity.
You just tried to bribe a federal officer.
This is America.
This is my home!
Good for you, little man.
We're the little man.
The show goes on! They're gonna need to send in the National Guard to take me out, because I ain't going nowhere!
That's Leonardo DiCaprio howling himself hoarse as the Wolf of Wall Street. We now move still further into wild country with Sebastian Silva's improv drama about the crystal fairy, the magic cactus, and the Mayan prophecy of 2012. It's almost as if the cast have been doing loads of drugs.
Hey, who's she?
Isn't she amazing?
Hola.
Hi. Hola.
This is Crystal Fairy.
Crystal Fairy.
She's gonna come with us to the north tomorrow. We made this plan for us to drink San Pedro on the beach.
It's gonna be fun.
Hang on to your bong, your mirror, and your rolled up banknote. Crystal Fairy casts lovable Michael Cera as an American tourist drifting through Chile and searching enlightenment via the medium of hallucinogenic drugs. Gabby Hoffman provides the magic cactus, Chile provides the beach, and from here, it's just a short step to Nirvana.
It's very important before taking drugs as a group that everybody sort of commune with one another, you know?
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. I mean, it's either that or an orgy, and I don't think the boys are ready for that.
Henry, a committed performance from Michael Cera here?
Yeah, definitely a committed performance from him, and a conscious effort to get away from the stereotype of what we know of Michael Cera already. I actually really like this, and I thought going into it that it was going to be that worst of things, which is a director showing a drug trip on screen. And with the exception of Gaspar Noé, there's nobody that does that well, I think. But this is very simple. It's just two arrogant, slightly too forthright Americans and free, very laid-back Chileans hanging out on a beach and cooking up a cactus and going on a drug experience. But it's done very sensitively, very softly. And it's actually quite a fun watch, this, I thought.
OK, so Scorsese is criticised for glamorising the lifestyle in Wolf of Wall Street. How about this?
It's a glamorisation, but then it's also true to the age that they are, I think. They're very, you know, they're in their early 20s. They think that they're going to discover the world by going on a drug trip. And that's what this is about, and that's all it is. And I really like that understated tone that it took.
Catherine, at times it reminded me, it's like a kind of honourable poor cousin to Las Vegas last week, where it's basically it's basically these Hollywood stars going off on a holiday and saying, we're going to film it. But it's kind of charming, where Las Vegas wasn't.
Yeah, I don't buy that at all. I mean, that doesn't, on no level does that seem valid to me as a comparison. But, okay, yeah.
Extrapolate.
No, I mean, this is, it's great. It's surprisingly great, right? I mean, and I haven't seen Magic Magic, which he's also done with the same director, but I love what he's doing here, and I love really what he did in This Is the End, and I, you know, he's so great. It's weird because he's such a kind of cartoon, and, you know, we've always seen him being a cartoon, even in the sort of naturalistic things like Nick and Nora or, you know, even Juno, but here it's, you know, he's really... It's really scuzzed it up, but in a really charming way. It was an absolute revelation.
Well, there's this sort of friction between what we think we know of him from his screen persona and the screen persona he's giving us here, and they kind of meet, but there's a tension there, which is kind of interesting.
And I think for me, what it reminded me most of was Ryan Gosling's was Only God Forgives in terms of that relationship. So you've got a big star who's known for doing one thing, going off with a director, a foreign language director, you know, blah, blah, and sort of subverting it. And Only God Forgives, it was like just a massive subversion, perhaps too far. And this is the similar sort of thing. Mm. It is artistically successful.
But this is much more forgiving. I think if you're a fan of Michael Cera, there's a lot in this, of his stereotypical parts that he's played, there's a lot in this that you'll like. There is aspects of him being goofy and a bit arrogant. But at the same time, it's thrown together into a drama which actually means something and is an interesting departure from what he does as well.
Is it just too self-indulgent for most tastes, you think?
There's an element of self-indulgence, but then I don't know, really. I think if you're willing to step into this world with them, then, yeah, you can enjoy it. I think it's an independent film. It's made for a very small budget. Mm. It's very much dependent on caring about young people going off and getting high. If you can get with that, then go
And, you know, he could be cashing in and going and making really bland rom-coms at this stage of his career. So credit to him for doing this.
Yeah, he could be doing Superbad too. So at least he's not doing that.
I'd like to see that.
Listen to me. Yeah. You're embarrassing yourself.
Am I embarrassing yourself?
We're all one self, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. One giant consciousness.
What? What's your religion? Are you religious or something? That's like doors of perception shit you're saying, you know? You ever read that book? You know that book? Doors of perception. Yes!
Michael Cera and Gabby Hoffman in The Crystal Fairy there. Let's end with a classic. It's the reissued version of Charles Laughton's Southern Gothic melodrama, The Night of the Hunter, starring Shelley Winters, Lillian Gish, and, of course, the great Robert Mitchum.
Leaning, leaning, safe and secure from all alarms. Leaning, leaning, leaning on the everlasting arms. What a fellowship.
Described by director Charles Laughton as a nightmarish sort of Mother Goose tale, The Night of the Hunter has its two pint-sized heroes pursued through the Ohio River Valley by Robert Mitchum's demented, tattooed preacher man. It's a film of deep shadows and demonic dark pockets, as enticing now as it was in the day.
Leaning on Jesus, leaning on Jesus, safe and secure from all alarms. Leaning on Jesus, leaning on Jesus, leaning on the everlasting arms.
Catherine, love or hate?
Oh. Oh no.
Fillmore Show.
Love, big love. Is that right? Yeah. It's amazing, isn't it? And it's quite salutary in a week. You know, we're actually shooting this on the day that in the UK we have the release of 12 Years a Slave, and everyone is talking about it as this extraordinary. no one's ever seen a movie like it. But this is this. You know, this is up there with it. This is pretty amazing. I find it very. I rewatched Out of the Past a couple of weeks ago, and I was sort of underwhelmed by Robert Mitchum. And he's got such a strange, bulky presence, and this really uses him so much better. Charles Dalton obviously kind of gets that, but it's just shockingly great at every turn, isn't it? I mean, the imagery, it's just amazing.
His kind of masculinity is almost kind of grotesque and ludicrous, and it kind of mines that really, really well. And the whole film is, people say, oh, it's like a sort of fairy tale, and it is like a fairy tale in that it's weird, in that it's kind of all over the place. Tonally, you have these great whiplash changes of pace, so it has that kind of dreamlike intensity, but in the way that actual dreams are.
Oh, it's a nightmare, basically. And it has, like, you're right, the first half is almost like a kind of southern soap opera, with the scheming guy coming into the house and trying to get the money of the deceased husband, and then suddenly it goes off into this weird, almost Willy Wonka-esque alternative reality, and great use of all the silhouettes against the backdrop, and I believe it was inspired by German expressionism or something like that, and you have these silhouette cutouts, and there's a wonderful shot where he's chasing them up from the cellar steps and he's reaching out with both hands to try and grab them, and he is a monster, he's an absolute monster.
And well, he's the wolf, I mean, talk about DiCaprio's Wolf of Wall Street, but this is the fairy tale wolf, isn't
this
it?
This has really got teeth, you know, it makes Wolf of Wall Street look a little bit gummy.
And another comparison between the two, I mean, you wrote a piece a couple of weeks ago saying that in 2014 you want to see shorter films. Wolf of Wall Street runs for 3 hours. This film is 92 minutes and every scene runs exactly as long as it needs to. It tells you what you need to know and then it moves on to the next one. And it's so pacey and wonderfully dark and mysterious because of that pace as well. You're never quite sure where you're going to take a footy on it, I think.
And yet, when it came out in the mid-50s, people hated it, and Charles Lawton never made another film.
Yeah, but people were dumb back then. Just the olden days.
They couldn't read too well.
Yeah.
Just like,
you just got to pity them, I mean.
So everything in black and white for a start. No great hands. I think there's so much going on that is strange in this film in terms of the camera technique as well. There's these wonderful shots where he's swooping across the house, the homestead, and there's a thing where he does this almost cartoonish zoom in to the kids in the basement. And there's so much weird, not just thematic stuff, but camera work that I can understand why people were shocked and appalled by it at the time.
And I kind of think they still would be now. I mean, obviously we're much more intelligent now, much more sophisticated, but it's still a film that it's almost legitimate to laugh at it at times.
Yeah.
And I think it's playing with those responses, and that's fine.
It's about that John and that Pearl.
Oh, them poor little lambs. To think I never hope to see them again in this world. Oh, dear madam, if you was to know what a crown of thorns I've borne in my search for them stray chicks.
Ruby, go fetch them kids.
Oh, madam, I see you're looking at my hands. Would you like me to tell you the little story of left hand and right hand, the tale of good and evil? It was with this left hand that old brother Cain struck the blow that laid his brother low.
Them kids is yours?
My own flesh and blood.
Where's your missus?
She run off with a drummer during prayer meeting.
The evergreen, incorruptible Night of the Hunter there. Weather permitting, Henry and I will be over at Sundance next week. But rest assured, the film show will abide and endure without us, and thank heavens for that. See you soon.